When I was growing up, I used to love to go visit my grandmother and grandfather Bates up in New Harbor, Maine. They lived in a one-story house overlooking the water. You could see Monhegan Island off in the distance. I used to love to stand at the big picture window, looking out towards the ocean. Sometimes when the sun was setting, you could see the houses on Monhegan Island, even though it was 7 miles away. They had a front door that looked out towards the ocean. They called it their front door because of that. The back door looked out towards the road. And there was a little set of steps going down to a lawn. And the lawn went over towards the ocean about 20 feet. And then there was a small cliff about 8 feet high going down to some more rocks. Then there was the ocean. And there was a set of iron steps going down from the cliff down to the rocks. One Thanksgiving, we were up there. We'd go up there a lot for Thanksgiving every other year or so. And there was a huge storm. And we actually stopped eating dinner to go over and watch the waves. The waves were coming up, hitting the rocks, rolling up over the cliff and rolling right up the lawn, right to the front steps of the house. And when we went out after the storm was over, it had ripped those iron steps right out of the cement that they were embedded in and taken them out to sea. I love the power of the ocean. And I like going for walks with my grandfather, too. Sometimes we'd get up early in the morning before my parents were awake, and we'd walk down to Gilbert Brothers Wharf, have some muffins, corn muffins or bran muffins, Gramp have a cup of coffee, then we'd come back and have breakfast. Other times we'd walk away from the water, across the street, up a little hill, and there was an old logging road going off into the woods, and we'd walk for a little ways, and then we'd get to an old car that someone had just left there, driven out years ago, left it there. So long ago, there was a big tree trunk, about 4 or 5 inches around, growing up through the back of the car. And the windows had been shot out by hunters. There were bullet holes all through the rusted body of the car. The engine was gone. The hood was gone. But the seats were still there. And the steering wheel, and the stick shift, and the steering wheel still moved. And we'd get to that car, and Gramp, he'd look at me and he'd say, "Do you want to go for a drive?" And I'd say, "Yeah." And he'd say, "Well, I've been driving a lot lately. Why don't you drive?" And I'd get into the car very carefully because the springs were poking up through the seats. I had to sit down pretty carefully, and I'd start up the car. Sometimes it took a while, you know. I'd go, vroom, 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 vroom. I'd try again. Vroom, 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 vroom. Wouldn't start. So sometimes I'd have to get out and go around and open the hood that wasn't there, look at the engine that wasn't there, move some wires that weren't there, and then I'd come in and it would start right up. And Gramp, he'd say, "Now you got it started. Where do you want to go?" And I might say, "Alaska." "Oh, good. Great place to go. Start driving." And we'd drive across the country. He'd tell me everything we saw as we went. We'd get up to Alaska. He'd tell me what we saw there. And after we'd driven around Alaska for a while, he'd say, "Alaska's been fun. But let's go someplace different. Where do you want to go now?" And I might say, "Africa." "Oh, great place to go, but you better roll up the windows. It gets pretty wet going from Alaska to Africa." And I'd pretend to roll up the windows, and then we'd go under the water. He'd tell me everything we saw there, sea turtles going by, sharks, whales, and different plants, and then we'd come up out of the water, and he'd tell me everything we saw in Africa. Grasslands, deserts, mountains, jungles, people, animals. And then Gramp would say to me, "Are you getting hungry?" And I'd say, "Yeah." They used to say I had a hollow leg when I was a kid. It had to be kept full of food. Well, I was pretty hungry by then, and we'd drive home. It always took less time to get home than it did to get there, and we'd get out of the car, we'd walk back, and we'd have something to eat. Sometimes it was breakfast, or if we'd been walking in the afternoon, we'd come home and have pink jello. My grandmother made it. It was strawberry jello or raspberry jello, and she'd make it, and she'd put it in the fridge to gel, and just before it gelled, she'd take it out and use an egg beater and whip it full of air. It would double in size. And instead of gelling red after she put it back in, it would gel pink. And when you ate it, it was like eating pink air. I love pink jello. And another reason I liked going to visit my grandmother and grandfather Bates they had a color TV set. We didn't. This was back in about 1961, and my parents had a black and white TV set they were given when they were married, but my grandparents had one of the first color TV sets, and the colors were a little strange. People's lips would turn purple, and you'd have to get up and fiddle with the dials a little bit to make them back sort of close to normal, and you'd come back and sit down, and still it was in color. And at night, we'd be watching it with our eyes wide open and our mouths open, and Gramp, he'd say, "Come on, it's time to go to bed." And we go, "No, we gotta watch TV. It's in color. We've never seen color before." And he'd say, "Look, if you get in your pajamas quick and get into bed, I'll tell you a story." And we get into bed quick, because he told great stories. And one night, I remember, I was lying in the top bunk. My brother, Richard, was in the bottom bunk. Stephen, he was the littlest kid. He was in the biggest bed over in the corner. And Gramp, he was standing in the doorway. I could see the light on one half of his face. We always kept a light on in the hallway because I was scared of the dark when I was a kid. And I remember him saying, "Do you know that once upon a time, Woody Woodpecker lived in New Harbor, Maine?" And we were pretty impressed. You know Woody Woodpecker, that cartoon character, that bird with the red head and the yellow beak and sometimes wears blue overalls and has a crazy laugh, the one that goes, "Ha, ha, 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 ha." Well, Gramp said that not only did Woody Woodpecker live in New Harbor, Maine, he used to live right next door to my grandparents in that two-story house just up the coast. And we were very impressed, a famous cartoon character like that living close by to my grandparents. And Gramp said, "Yeah, he lived there until one spring, wasn't all that long ago. He was out working in the garden, and he got his clothes all dirty, grass stains on the knees, and he knew he ought to wash those clothes quick before the stain set in, so he went inside, went upstairs into his bedroom on the second floor, he changed his clothes, got into some clean clothes, and he took the dirty clothes downstairs into the basement where the washing machine was. He opened up the lid of the machine, it was a top loader, and he put in the dirty clothes, he got down a full box of laundry detergent, he just bought it the day before. He opened it up. It said to put in a cup for a top-loading machine, so he measured out one cup of detergent. He put it in. And Gramp said that Woody Woodpecker was all set to close up that machine when he thought to himself, "These clothes are really dirty. I don't know if one cup's going to get them clean." And he looked on the side of the box, and it said, "For real dirty clothes, you can use extra detergent." So Gramp said Woody Woodpecker, he put in a second cup. And he thought to himself, "No, maybe three would be better," and he put in a third. He said, "No, four, no, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And Gramp said after the 15th cup, Woody Woodpecker stopped, and he thought, "These are really the dirtiest clothes I've ever seen in my life. Maybe I ought to put in the whole box." And Gramp said he put that whole box of laundry detergent into that washing machine. And it was one of those big economy-sized boxes. You've seen them. They're huge. It took him a long time to put all that soap in there. And then he tossed the empty box over his shoulder, and Gramp said, Woody Woodpecker, he closed up the machine, and he turned it on. And then he went upstairs, up to the second floor, to do some spring cleaning, open the windows, air the place out a little bit. Well, it didn't take long, said my grandfather, before Woody Woodpecker heard, coming from down in the basement, "Thump, thump, 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 thump." And he says, "What's that?" And he ran downstairs, down into the basement, and there was that washing machine inching its way across the cellar floor. And the lid was going up and down, and soap suds were popping out of the machine. There was already a foot and a half of soap suds on the cellar floor. And even Woody Woodpecker, crazy as he is, said my grandfather, knew that he ought to shut that machine off. But he couldn't get to it. He slipped and he fell down. He got up, he slipped and fell down again. Soap suds were pouring faster and faster out of this machine. They swept him off his feet. He was floating on 3 feet of soap suds, and then four, and then five, and then finally, said my grandfather, those soap suds pushed Woody Woodpecker, boom, 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 up the stairs and out the cellar door. And he tried to get to a window or a door to get out, but he couldn't. He kept slipping and falling and sliding and swirling around and around, soap suds pouring faster and faster out of that cellar door, carrying them around and around, filling that first floor faster than they'd filled up the basement, until they pushed him, boom, 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 upstairs onto the second floor. And it's a good thing said my grandfather, that he was doing his spring cleaning, and a couple of those windows were open. Or I don't know what would have happened. Those soap suds finally carried Woody Woodpecker around till he was right near one of those open windows, and then they popped him out the window. And then he was falling on a waterfall of soap suds down the side of the house. And then he was going on a river of soap suds across the lawn and across the rocks. And finally, on an island of soap suds, Woody Woodpecker floated out to sea. And we said, "How'd he get back?" And Gramp said, No. That's another story. And you'll have to wait till tomorrow night to hear that story. And if you don't go to sleep tonight, tomorrow night won't come, you know, so go to sleep." And then we said, "Gramp, is that story true?" And you know what? That night, he wouldn't tell us. He wouldn't say yes or no. All he said was, "I'll tell you what, we'll go to the beach tomorrow and we'll see if it's true. Now go to sleep." And we went to sleep. And the next day we went to Pemaquid Point Beach. It's pretty close to New Harbor. And we were walking hand in hand up and down the beach, the way you do with your grandparents, you know. And the waves were coming up, hitting the beach, rolling up the sand, and then rolling back down into the ocean. And at the highest point those waves came up, they left a thin line of foam. And my grandfather pointed to it and he said, "You see that foam? That's all because Woody Woodpecker put too much laundry detergent in his washing machine. And there was a big wind that day, and there were some big waves out on the ocean with white caps on the top of them, and Gramp, he pointed to him, and he said, 'You see those white caps? That's why they're there, too. All because of Woody Woodpecker.'" So, that next day, Gramp said the story was true. And later on, I think it was in junior high school, I learned other reasons for the foam being there and the white caps. But they didn't stick. Because my grandfather, he got to me first. So his is the only reason I can tell you. And I'd forgotten all about that story until, oh, it was a little over 10 years ago now. Grant Bates passed away one night in his sleep very quietly. And I was the oldest grandchild, and they asked me to say something at the funeral. And I was always the sort of kid growing up that I did my homework at the last minute. You know, at breakfast while waiting for the bus. And I still do that as a grown-up. And I'd thought about what to say, but I hadn't written anything down. And so there I was, standing in front of the church, still not quite sure what I was going to say. And then I remembered going for walks in the woods and that old car. And I remembered Gramp standing in that doorway with the light on one half of his face and telling that story. And that's what I told about. And I've been telling that story ever since. And when I do, it's almost like my grandfather's right there telling it with me. And if you want to tell that story to anybody else, my grandfather and I, we wouldn't mind. Not one bit.